genuinely doesn't remember. Well, she was also asked, what were you thinking when all of the invasion started happening of the Capitol? Who did you think was doing it? And she said, well, we thought it was Antifa or Black Lives Matter.
And when you were notified that people had entered the Capitol illegally, did you also understand at that point that there had been violence at the Capitol?
I only knew what I was told. I'd heard a gunshot. We all heard it. And we were so confused. We thought Antifa was breaking in or BLM because of those were the riots that had gone on and on all throughout 2020, day in and day out.
So she says in the moment, they thought that it was Antifa or Black Lives Matter rioting at the Capitol, even though we all knew it was the Trump people who were at the rally. They just walked and started rioting at the Capitol. But it doesn't even seem that she believed that, because we now have another text that she sent to Mark Meadows as this was going on, where she said, Mark, I was just told there's an active shooter on the first floor of the Capitol. Please tell the president to calm people. This isn't the way to solve anything. Nothing there about we think it's Antifa, nothing about we think it's Black Lives Matter. And more pointedly, if it was Antifa or Black Lives Matter, they're not going to listen to Trump saying calm down. Why would Trump calm down his enemies? Trump would only be able to calm down the people on his side. So another example, she obviously knew that the people there were Trumpists. Last example for today, although there's many more. During Marjorie Taylor Greene's under oath hearings, she was asked about a Capitol rioter named Anthony Aguero. And in the testimony, she said, he's a distant friend. I've not spent much time with him. He's just a distant friend. Although Aguero referred to Marjorie Taylor Greene as a great friend, as a close friend. Well, there is now deleted video. Marjorie Taylor Greene has deleted this video where she said he is a great friend of hers. Take a look at this.
Because my friend Anthony is my dear, dear friend.
My dear, dear friend, Anthony. Not a distant friend. No. My dear, dear friend.
I love him so much. He's one of the greatest guys I know.
One of the greatest guys I know. I love him so much. So just another example of the obvious perjury when Marjorie Taylor Greene said, I don't remember, I don't recall, not really my friend, I don't really know. Now, I'm right there with you. To be prosecuted for perjury is very difficult. You have to prove she knew she was lying. You have to prove she did remember. So it's strategic memory loss, and by every legal analysis I've seen, it's an effective strategy. But she obviously lied. We'll have these clips on our Instagram at David Pakman Show. Today we had a horrible thing happen. It happens every once in a while. We have a guest scheduled, beautiful guest, and they no call, no show, giving us no notice whatsoever that they are not planning to join the interview. But the upside is we'll hear from a few of you via Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's go first to Rose from the United States. Rose, it's the United States is so general, but welcome.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
The audio quality is fine. I know you're quite a stickler for it.
It's quite good. Thank you.
Okay. I really feel uncomfortable disclosing my location on the internet. That being said, my question is, there's a really big gap between scientists and the general public. And it feels like the gap keeps growing and it gets more and more difficult to convey to the general public the precise nature of science and the difficulties associated with it. It feels like scientists are failing as a political entity to talk to the general public. How do you feel about this?
Like, I agree with you. I mean, I think here's the thing. If you told I'm not a scientist, but my instinct is if you told scientists you are failing as a political entity, they would say we're not a political entity. But at the same time, I acknowledge what you're saying, which is maybe it's science education that's failing and critical thinking and epistemology. I don't know, but you're absolutely right in your observation about the effects of it.
What can we do? Because I spent so much time thinking about this because in light of global warming, it's way worse than what most reports suggest. Most people don't know this, but the IPCC is meant to be...
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
We're continuing to follow as we continue to get closer and closer to the 2022 midterms, different races, primaries, elections, and campaigns that are going on. One that's really important is the Georgia gubernatorial race. Georgia played such an outsized role in the 2020 election due to the focus on it by those falsely claiming that Donald Trump actually won the state rather than Joe Biden. Joe Biden really won in Georgia in 2020. One of the people running in Georgia for governor is a woman named Candace Taylor. That's K-A-N-D-I-S-S is the spelling of Candace. A very disturbed woman. Not only does she seem completely clueless about every single issue she was asked about during a recent debate, we looked at some clips earlier this week, she has a new ad that is like nothing I have ever seen. I'm going to play it for you. It's sort of like Christian dominionist fear porn. It's like a roughly two-minute video. And the entire concept is that there's a satanic regime which her governorship would demolish. You might notice that that has definitely like a QAnon sort of sound to it. You really have to hear and see it. And I understand that it seems like satire. I get that. It feels like a skit, but it's real. Take a listen to this.
Some might even say they had to get our permission to at least tell us ahead of time, even if we didn't believe them. Over 4 billion people have been injected with something that took just 9 months to create.
So, anti-vax.
Ask yourself why. Back in biblical times, human sacrifice was a form of demonic worship.
Demons. This video also contains a depiction of an alleged Jewish ritual sacrifice. It's a really anti-Semitic thing from the Nuremberg Chronicle.
Still doing it in present day by killing our unborn.
This is anti-abortion.
Same demons, it's the same.
So anti-vax, anti-Semitic, anti-abortion.
Sacrifice, it's the same sin, it's just a different time.
This is a long shot in and of itself, running for governor against an incumbent. Why are you doing this?
Good question.
We don't call things out, and we don't acknowledge them, and we don't take authority and take dominion over what God's given us.
So dominion is an important word for these folks. I mean, they are quite literally Christian dominionists, and the use of that word is very specific.
Then we are no better than the evil ones that put it up. We've watched as people have destroyed our history and monuments, and in their place, they have erected statues to their own gods. The New World Order is here.
New World Order. So look, I mean, think of it. Look at what's adding up here. Anti-vax, anti-Semitic, anti-abortion, ghosts, demons, and Satan, New World Order conspiracy.
And they told us it was coming. It's a battle far greater than what we see in the natural. It is a war between good and evil.
So it feels like it must be a skit. Who could possibly be this delusional and this paranoid and this disconnected from reality? but it's real. And if you look at the comments online, there are people who are genuinely unsure whether it's real because it's so absurd. This is someone who sounds like they need professional help. If you met someone like this, and if it wasn't a campaign ad, but it was a dinner party, and they told you that they believe the things that this woman says she believes in the ad, you would say delusional paranoia. And unfortunately, there's a bunch of them running. In some races, they're all like this, at least in the Republican primary, I should say. All of the choices are like this, horrifyingly dangerous. And we are barreling towards a disastrous 2022 midterm where folks like this could win. Think about that. We've been covering the supposed bankruptcy of InfoWars conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. This is a very complicated topic, which involves Alex Jones being the target of multiple lawsuits and presumably going in the direction of him owing people a bunch of money, including parents of the victims of Sandy Hook. And interspersed with this, I told you a couple of weeks ago that Alex Jones has declared bankruptcy, and we and others immediately questioned the timing of the bankruptcy and, of course, the useful nature of a bankruptcy if you're trying to avoid paying anybody. One of the great things to do is to say you don't have any money. Well, now Alex Jones is actually bragging about $2 million donations that they've received. He says now they have $5 million in the bank. And this is something that to me seems like it would be very interesting to the bankruptcy trustees. Take a look.
Guess what? You must have made the donor mad. I don't know who they are, where they are. They could be in Japan, could be in the U.S., could be who knows where. I appreciate them. Whoever they are bought hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin at a lower price back in 2016, never spent any of them, and has now given us $1 million of Bitcoin. And you must have upset them, whoever they are, because, oh, sorry to the left and the globalists, they gave us $1 million more on Saturday. Let me break that for you while you sit there and say we're covering it all up and hiding it in bank accounts and all this crap. So,
I mean, you don't even need a bank account to hide Bitcoin to actually.
We no longer have $3 million in the company, barely enough to make payroll and operate my product. We now have $5 million. And we, guess what? You must...
So I'm sure this is something the bankruptcy court would be interested in, bankruptcy trustees, the trustee overseeing the Sandy Hook parents case. The Sandy Hook families would be very, very interested in hearing about this. You know, I sat next to one of Alex Jones' former attorneys on a flight recently. I talked about this on the bonus show, or maybe it was on a live stream. I don't think I've mentioned it on the podcast. No attorney-client privilege was breached because it was publicly known that this lawyer represented Alex Jones at one point. It was quite a conversation. And, you know, Alex Jones, on the one hand, has a whole area of controversy related to what counts as free speech. And that's controversial enough. And when does the speech become defamatory? And all of these things are kind of being legislated right now. The other side of this is this very strange and suspicious bankruptcy. And I don't doubt for a second that the bankruptcy isn't justifiable in some way, but the timing is just so suspect. And now bragging about having $5 million. Now, if you went to him, he would go, for us, $5 million is borderline bankruptcy because our payroll is so high and our costs to produce all these various supplements is so high. I don't even know whether the supplements are actually... Some people, when they do products, they don't buy a bunch of inventory up front. They're just kind of produced and shipped on demand, drop shipping. Anyway, we don't know the nature of that business. But he would say, this is just barely enough to fund our operation. It's not like now we're flush with cash. We certainly don't have any money for the Sandy Hook families. But this all stinks to high heaven, and it continues to point in that direction. And quite frankly, I don't know what the end game is. I don't know if Alex Jones genuinely believes that these manipulations when it comes to the bankruptcy and having cash and not and Bitcoin donations and all of it. I don't know. The other thing is whether there's someone wrote to me and said, Alex Jones seems confused about whether they got $1 million in Bitcoin or whether they got one Bitcoin. Now, could he really be confused about that? I don't think so. Now, if he knows the value, listen, I have absolutely no idea, but it would be an extra funny thing on top of all of the scam that's being run here. If he actually got one Bitcoin and not $1 million in Bitcoin, one Bitcoin worth about 30, 35 grand at this point in time. I don't know what the future of this is, but it all stinks and the grifting and the scamming continues. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. We have a packed Friday show for you today. The David Pacman Show is an audience-supported program. You can sign up for a membership at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code OBAMNA.
OBAMNA.
That's OBAMNA to get a discount at joinpacman.com. You'll get the bonus show. You'll get the commercial-free audio stream. You'll get the commercial-free video stream. You'll get priority access during viewer town halls and on and on and on. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Let's hear from people in the audience. The audience is why we do this. Without the audience, I'm a guy with a mic, and the mic might not even work if there were no audience. We do calls via Discord. You can find our Discord at davidpacman.com/Discord. We are going to go first to Nico from, I believe it's New Haven, Connecticut. Nico, welcome. Oh, boy. Nico from New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome. Nico, you're on the air. And Nico is gone. Let's go next to Steve from Chicago. Steve, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, David. I was just wondering, I saw your video about the decision that was leaked for the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And I know that towards the end, you were kind of talking about next steps of what could happen if this happened. I feel like you're usually pretty rational. I kind of felt like your thought process was like, do you actually think that's something realistically that would happen?
Listen, I did a follow-up on Wednesday where I say, I'm not literally claiming that in the next few months they're going to try to ban interracial marriage. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is you don't stop with one of your biggest victories and say, now we're satisfied, we're not doing anything else. Charlie Kirk literally said, if you can get rid of Roe v. Wade, anything is possible. So even they are saying it. So yes, I do think they're going to try to go further. I think it might be gay marriage. I think it could be, you know, access to contraception with no copays. But yes, I think they're going to try to go further.
Okay. I mean, I really don't. I mean, I'm not saying that they wouldn't go for anything else. I just don't think I've really seen much movement of like pushing for like the getting rid of interracial marriages or gay.
Okay,
marriage,
but I'm not sure. All right, Steve, did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I heard what you said.
Okay,
you said
yeah,
because
I'm also agreeing
else,
with you.
Anything's possible, but
I've not seen any movement in the last few days since the decision leaked to try to ban interracial marriage. But there's a list of things which some of these conservatives are also against. And my view is they're not going to stop with abortion. But I agree with you. In the last 4 days, they've not said we want to ban interracial marriage. We're on absolutely the same page, Steve.
No, I'm on the same page as you there. I'm saying also not even counting the past 4 days, looking at what they would like to do. I don't think that's even close to the top of something that would be within the next years or any relevant time.
You think they would you agree that they would gladly try to get rid of no copayment access to contraception as part of Obamacare? You think that's something they would want to get rid of?
I think that'd be definitely, I don't think that's a top list, but I think it's definitely more realistic than them being like, let's get rid of gay marriage.
Okay. I think many of them would love to get rid of gay marriage, but listen, let's just give it time and then we'll see. But I don't think this is the end. I'll just put it that way.
Okay. I was kind of wanting clarification because maybe I missed your follow-up. It kind of just sounded that you like thought like literally next step would just be get rid of like gay marriage and stuff like that. And didn't seem like there's been any like major push for that.
Right. I gave a list of, you know, a half dozen things. Let's see what they do next.
All right. Thank you.
All right. There's Steve from Chicago. Why don't we go next to, this is interesting. Let's go to Juan from my birth city of Buenos Aires, Argentina. Juan, welcome.
Hey, David. So you might know that abortion was legalized in Argentina last year.
I did know that.
A big part of that movement was like the green bandana. Being in Buenos Aires, I saw that everywhere. And I think that had like a big psychological effect, like that the green bandana, like public displays greatly outnumbered, like the blue bandana pro-lifer public displays. Do you think the Americans should adopt a symbol like that for their protests?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think it's the only thing that should be done, but why not? We know those types of things work and are effective. And, you know, in a sense, it's a version of the lawn sign. Like you see a lot of lawn signs for a candidate. It doesn't mean they're necessarily going to win, but I do think people are more invigorated in a sense behind political ideas when it looks like there's a community of support. So sure, I would be fine with something like that. I think it would be great.
Totally. Awesome.
So what's going on down? Are you from Argentina?
No, I'm from Venezuela.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
I emigrated here in 2018, and I really love Argentina, man. And the city's really treated me well.
With empanadas, are you for or against raisins in the empanada?
I'm very against raisins.
Really?
The Venezuelan empanada is actually quite different from the from the Argentine. I'm a little biased, but I think ours are better, David.
But aren't Venezuelan empanadas typically fried?
Yeah, that's why they're better.
Oh, God, get me away from that. If it's not oven-baked, put it in the trash, Juan.
God.
Okay. All right, thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay, there is Juan from Venezuela, now in Argentina. What a beautiful phone call. Let's go next to Bob from Colorado. Bob, welcome.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
So just about like everybody else, I'm going to ask about the abortion thing.
Okay.
Do you think this could maybe be, well, let me tell you where I'm coming from.
Okay.
So I know you mentioned a couple times that you think maybe, many Republicans don't want to ban abortion or overturn Roe v. Wade because it's such an important fundraising issue.
Yes.
Do you think this could be, with everything going on with Roe v. Wade, could be like a long-term loss for them because they lose such an important political wedge issue?
Right. So I think it is possible that in the long term, it will give them, it will take away a tool for the right to raise money. But remember that in the short run, just about every blue state and many red states still allow abortion. So for the next however many years, they'll just shift to saying, okay, we got what we needed at the Supreme Court. Now we have to go state by state to ban abortion. So they'll just move the goal. So I think they'll have plenty of cannon fodder, or no, I guess what would be the right term? They'll have plenty of gunpowder for many years at this point.
Okay. Yeah. And do you think it'll become kind of a rallying issue for the left, maybe get people more motivated to vote?
That's my hope. And I mentioned this on Monday. My hope is that absolutely, or Tuesday, my hope is that yes, if there's anything that can save the midterms, maybe it will be this.
And kind of, because I know one of the issues with the left is we have really low turnout, and kind of there's kind of a belief among many people that voting doesn't matter. Everybody's the same.
Oh, it matters, huh? I mean, think back to 2016 now.
Exactly. Yeah. So hopefully this will kind of light the fire on everybody, make everybody wake up and realize, holy crap.
That's my hope. I mean, listen, this is a disaster, but if there is to be any silver lining, that would potentially be it. And we'll know within a few months if that happens.
All righty. Thank you for taking my call, David.
Thank you for the call. There is Bob. Very, very important issue. Let's go next to Casey from Kansas. Casey, welcome.
Howdy.
How are you?
I'm assuming everybody's already asked abortion questions.
There have been a number of them.
But mine is just more about the Democrats' response to this. Do you fear that the moderate Democrats will be too weak to fight for abortion rights in this case?
Yeah. I mean, to some degree, I think I haven't paid, to be perfectly frank, I haven't paid much attention to the moderate Democrat response so far, but it wouldn't surprise me to see moderate Democrats. I mean, listen, they can probably sort of not anger anybody too much to jeopardize their positions by saying, I am for choice, but want to leave it up to the states. That's the kind of cop out centrist statement they can make.
Okay, and just one more thing. Do you think that the Democrats' response to the extremist Supreme Court has been a failure until now? The way that they have, like, not allowed rhetoric about how dangerous the Supreme Court is with the extremists in it, and completely not allowed discussion about packing the courts or anything?
I would say yes, but it's even bigger than that. It's even back to 2016, not enough Democrats and people on the left saying, this is exactly what might happen if Trump beats Hillary. I was saying it, and I'm not patting myself on the back because there were others saying it as well.
But like with Jimmy Dore and Sam Cedar?
I don't remember Sam taking that position. I remember Dore taking it.
He had a debate with Jimmy Dore. Where
oh, right.
Jimmy
and
Dore
Sam I think, was in agreement with me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's this has been a problem for a while, and you're identifying one element of the problem, but it's an even bigger problem.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for taking my question, David.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Let's go next to Miguel from the country of Peru. Miguel, bienvenido.
Gracias, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Now, you're not on a speakerphone, are you? You would never do that.
I would never do it.
Okay, good.
I have headphones on right now.
Beautiful.
Great. Love the conversations about empanadas. I think Peru has a lot to contribute to that conversation.
Good.
But I am pro-raisin, but I will ask a more substantive question before we talk about that.
Please.
So about inflation, it's a big issue not only in the U.S. but all over the world. And I've had a lot of conversations about if CPI or percentage change of CPI, which is how we measure inflation, is really the best way to reflect the increase of cost of living, especially between different socio-demographic groups. So my question to you would be, is there a better way or anything that has been proposed to understand the cost, the increase in cost of living in different socio-demographic groups?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct that CPI, meaning the consumer price index, which is often how we look at inflation, does not capture every situation and every population equally. If I understand correctly, it's mostly urban centers, and they're looking at food and beverages, housing, apparel, transportation, medical care, recreation. You know, it's a bunch of different things. You're completely right. It's not perfect, and it doesn't capture maybe at low, middle, and higher incomes what the change has been. And of course, the other thing to remember is that for lower incomes, a 5% increase is much more meaningful than a 5% increase at higher incomes. So no metric is perfect. And I mean, I think the issue would be, okay, so let's propose something else, and I'm not sure what that would be, but it's not a perfect metric.
Agreed, agreed. I have a quick another question. I'm half Jewish, but I'm not very connected with that part of my heritage. What would be some Jewish foods, and in particular, are Jewish foods in the U.S. mostly Eastern European? Because I kind of feel like that's kind of what's going on when I eat Jewish food in the U.S. Is there American Jewish food versus Eastern European Jewish food versus Middle Eastern Jewish food? What does that look like?
I can't say too much about American Jewish food, but basically when people are talking about so-called Jewish food, you've got the Eastern European stuff, which has a lot of overlap with Russian and Ukrainian and Polish food as well. And then you have what we would consider more the Israeli foods, which have a lot of overlap with other Middle Eastern countries. So, you know, in your Eastern European kind of area, you've got your matzo ball soup, of course. You've got pastrami on rye with mustard. You have knishes. You have kind of like that world, chocolate babka, things like this. On your Middle Eastern, more Israeli type Mediterranean side, there's a lot of overlap with other Middle Eastern countries, even a little bit with places like Greece, et cetera. And so there you're talking about falafel or falafel, as some like to say, hummus, stuff like that. I don't know about like American Jewish food. I think it's just a kind of either of the two things I just mentioned.
Correct. I was just thinking about pastrami sandwiches when Jewish diner kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess that is more American. So I guess I'll go back. Like the idea of brisket is more of an Eastern European thing because it used to be really cheap and you know, it wasn't very good and you had to cook it all day for it to be remotely tender. Now brisket is very hip. But I think if you talk about, you know, places like Katz Deli in New York, that would be more the Americanized Eastern European Jewish food.
Right. Pleasure talking to you.
All right. My pleasure. There is Miguel from Peru. Very powerful declarations that he made about food. Let's take a very quick break. If you're holding, we're coming right back to the phone, so don't go anywhere. Let's go right back and hear from some members of the audience. We do these calls via Discord. You can find our Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go to Snake from Moscow, Russia. This should be interesting. Snake, what's going on? Snake from Moscow, Russia, please unmute. And last chance for Snake from Moscow, Russia. Too bad. Too bad. That would have been interesting. Let's go next to let's go to Rich from Illinois. Rich, welcome.
Hi, David.
Hello.
So I was the top mod of Donald on Reddit for years until just before it was banned. And with Elon buying Twitter, do you think that there will be a general shift in policy for the tech places towards allowing things like medical misinformation, such as ivermectin, and what Vice's motherboard did yesterday with tweeting out the misoprostol for abortion pills?
What's the Vice thing? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so they tweeted out from their motherboard account that misoprostol, which is a horse medicine to treat ulcers for horses, can be used for abortion pills.
Oh, I see that now. Yeah. Okay, so let's go step by step. First, I actually discussed this with Coleman Hughes in an already recorded but not yet released podcast episode with him. I actually don't think that Elon Musk taking over Twitter, if it happens, remember, it's still not been approved, and I think it may not be, but we'll wait and see. I don't think it's going to do anything mind-blowing on Twitter per se. I think maybe some people will be unbanned, maybe not. I don't know that he is widely going to be involved in content moderation, so I'm not making any big judgments about what's going to change on Twitter. Let's first wait and see if the buyout actually happens, and then we'll kind of think about that part. In terms of, I don't know much about this misoprostol thing, but I also don't know whether this is an approved off-label use or not. I don't know anything about it, but let me just say right now, all of this stuff should be subject to the same scrutiny, whether it's being promoted by left or right. I think it all should be subjected to the exact same terms of service.
Okay, that's good.
Now, let me ask you, so you were a top moderator on The Donald, which was widely considered one of the most toxic enclaves of the internet until it was banned. Are you a Trump guy?
I am.
Wow. And so, and now what do you think about, like, do you believe ivermectin works to treat COVID?
I don't know because I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
So I will not make
How would you determine,
otherwise.
Do you think Advil works for headaches?
I do.
And why do you think that people, not being a doctor?
See, it does for some people. It doesn't for others. Ibuprofen works for others better than Advil does or, you know, other things.
So ibuprofen and Advil are the same thing.
Yeah. Aspirin. That's what I mean.
Okay. But why do you feel so strongly about your knowledge of ibuprofen and not ivermectin?
No. Yeah, that wasn't the kind of gist of what I was trying to get at. The fact that people were getting banned for mentioning off-label use of ivermectin, which is approved drug for humans.
But it's not approved for COVID. Banned. You agree that with that, yeah. Right?
I don't know. But like I said, I'm not a doctor, so I don't pretend to.
But wait a second. Hold on a second. See, the problem is whenever I ask you a direct question, you say, I don't know because I'm not a doctor. But you just asserted you do know that ivermectin is, quote, approved for humans. But isn't, how do you know that without being a doctor?
Well, I know that ivermectin is approved for humans because that is actually documented.
It's so maybe instead of saying, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, you would just say, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I were to assert to you that the way we figure out if a medication works for a condition is to do a randomized controlled trial, would you agree that that's a good way to figure out whether a medication works?
I do believe in science, so I would agree 100% with that.
Beautiful. And if I told you that there were two randomized controlled trials which looked at ivermectin for COVID and neither showed that it did anything, would that be compelling if you were to see those studies? I know you haven't seen them, but given that you've accepted the randomized controlled trial, if randomized controlled trials said it doesn't work for COVID, would that satisfy you?
Oh, of course.
It would. Okay, good. All right. Well, those studies exist. Check out my clips on them, okay?
Okay.
All right. You still like Trump?
I was going to say this misoprostol thing is being out there, and they are being banned for it, even though it's not approved for use on humans.
They are not being banned, you're saying?
No. Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. They did not.
Yeah, listen, this is the first I heard about it, so I'm not trying to cop out. Like, these claims should all be managed in the same way, but in terms of service. You know, we have to have the same rules, no matter whether it's hydroxy or misoprostol or whatever. I just don't know anything about misoprostol right now, so I can't say.
Okay.
Fair?
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for taking it.
No problem. All right. See, guys, look at that. What a conversation. We were able to do it. Let's hear from a couple of other people. Just remember that putting parentheses in front of your nickname on Discord to get to the top of the list guarantees you will not speak to me, because that it's just a trick. Okay. People are like, oh, it's alphabetical. I'll start with parentheses and then I'll be at the top. I don't even look at those. So that's a good way to not get on. Let's go to Chris from Massachusetts. Chris, welcome.
Hey, David.
Hello.
I don't have much for you today. I guess, have any other callers talked about the Roe v. Wade decision?
Only all of them.
Only all of them. What about the leak?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, the leak, some are saying, is the most serious thing that's ever happened, worse than the Trump riots. The fact that this leaked 3 weeks early, it's like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I mean, that, in my opinion, is probably one of, like, I don't know, the lesser consequential factors of this whole kind of thing that's unfolding.
I agree.
It is a kind of – one thing, though, is I've heard people saying online that, you know, oh, the leaker is this patriot. And we don't really know why this content was leaked.
I agree.
So I would be hesitant to – you know, kind of go like take that line so early, because, you know, there's a compelling something that I find compelling is the idea that, you know, this was leaked earlier than the normal Supreme Court summer publishing of these decisions.
Yeah.
To get it into the media cycle earlier than it would be and farther away from the midterms so that it can run through the media cycle. Maybe folks will forget about it. Before the midterms happen.
It's so very speculative. I mean, listen, you could say, oh no, they leaked it the day that the primaries started to have the maximum effect. Or you could say what you're saying, which is if you wait, it has more of an effect. So by leaking it instead of waiting until the end of June, now voters can have it in mind for all of the primaries in May and June. I think you can make the argument either way. We just don't know. For me, it's like we found out 3 weeks earlier. That's it. It's really not a big part of the story for me.
Do you think there's any merit in like the idea that, you know, these leaks, you know, if they were to happen again in the future, would influence, you know, the Supreme Court justices in their decisions?
I really don't, because, I mean, I don't know. They're appointed for life and they have great security. It's just hard for me to imagine that.
Yeah, because it seems like because of the fact they were appointed for life, I mean, how much is public opinion
right.
gonna really influence their decisions?
I agree completely. Yeah, I just don't see it.
All right. Thanks, David.
All right. My pleasure. There's Chris from Massachusetts with some relevant elements for today's show. I'm told Snake from Moscow has fixed their mic. Let's try it once more. Snake, please, are you with us from Moscow?
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, Snake, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I guess my question would be a lot more theoretical rather than pertaining to particular issues. But there's a lot of a debate among liberal Russian elites or general anti-war population on the purpose and value of nonviolent protests when Russia has engaged in an attempt to destroy Ukrainian statehood. And so the anti-war protests, which are peaceful, usually manifest themselves as graffiti, is writing on cash, etc., trying to distribute anti-war messaging without getting into any type of violent or physical altercation with anybody or anything. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, do you think there is any value or purpose in nonviolent measures in a time which is essentially war enacted by our government against other people?
This is a really great question, because at some point, you know, all of us who as a principle are against violence, sometimes we get to a point where we say, well, we're trying to protest horribly violent acts like the invasion of Ukraine with signs and writing on dollar bills. And it just doesn't, if I'm hearing you correctly, Snake, you're saying it does. Is it really going to achieve anything? Is it enough?
Mm-hmm. That is the sense that this is nothing in comparison to state propaganda and therefore is useless and doesn't need to exist.
Yeah. I mean, I am sympathetic to that question. And where I come down is, and maybe I'm naive or idealistic, I just don't know that the random people on the street getting violent is actually going to have the effect on the policy that maybe we would like it to, compared to crippling sanctions, government saying we are not going to allow this, or what. It's just hard for me to imagine. It's to some degree, Snake, it's like when these people say, if the Jews had handguns, World War II wouldn't have happened. And every historian that has looked at it says that's just not true. So I understand the instinct, but I wonder how based in reality the idea is. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And if I can, my second question is going to be slightly more practical. How do you think we can build bridges between populations that are not existing in the same reality? In the United States, it seems to me like anybody moderate versus Trumpist / MAGA hat people.
Yeah.
In Russia, it's the so-called Vatniks, who are Soviet-era ideologues versus more younger, liberal, or just plain more moderate population of Russia. Do you think it is even possible to build bridges between such groups of people who don't seem to align anywhere?
So I think it's possible. Here's the answer. At the individual level, every expert I've spoken to says the way you build those bridges is you have to just start with what we agree on. And sometimes it's very little, but there's usually some agreement. Do we agree that we prefer solutions without violence? Yes. Okay. Let's use that and then see where we get to a point of disagreement. This is a long, arduous, time-consuming process. At the mass scale level, how do we deprogram people who won't even accept basic facts? I don't have the answer to that, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my questions.
Hey, so before you go, you're calling from Russia.
Yeah, from Moscow.
And so what is would you say the general sentiment there is that people like the invasion of Ukraine or people are against the invasion of Ukraine?
I have to say that I will have a certain Moscow liberal bias because that's the area where I was raised and my family has always been critical of the government. There is not a single person in my immediate circles that are fans of this government.
Okay.
But I would say that just from my own personal experience, just looking at cars or driving or parking anywhere, mm-hmm. I don't see a single Z sign. There is no single, I would say, personal initiative to install anything that is commemorative to this war. All I've seen is state council, local efforts, which are sponsored from the state, from the federal budget, to try and convince people to engage in such practices. And some type of coercion that's happening, for example, in kindergartens. Oftentimes, parents discover that the school trip or the kindergarten trip they send their children to was actually a sort of patriotic event.
Boy.
Because they then later find pictures of the children posed in the letter Z on social media or something.
That's the patriotic education Trump keeps talking about. Now, listen, do you feel safe expressing your views antagonistic to the government?
On here, yes.
Okay.
Over at my university, I've already sort of spoken myself into 15 years of prison, if anybody would like dig anywhere around me. This is just a weird stasis that I know that if anybody looked at me or what I've been writing, what I've been saying, it is quite possible that I will face some sort of fine or maybe even jail time. After all, a person was arrested yesterday for walking out with a printout of Russian Constitution onto the streets in Ekaterinburg.
Dear God.
And, there are, unfortunately, I'm also, you know, like a liberal, I'm a college professor. So if any of my students decide that they don't like me, they can write a letter to Следственный комитет, which is like a prosecutor's office of Russia, and I will be gone.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
But on the other hand, unfortunately, my family has had this same experience since 1930s. So it's not like we're inexperienced in this particular situation.
Sure.
So it's
sure, sure.
It's just weird, and I don't like it.
Well,
that's
stay safe, Snake. And how upset were you by the closure of McDonald's in Russia?
Actually, there is a lot of working McDonald's spots. Like,
really?
Yeah, I visited Kazan, which is a city in Tatarstan, a republic within Russia, and they have plenty working McDonald's. I think all of the McDonald's located at airports are working as well.
Wow.
I think franchisees are still open, while those that were commanded by U.S. headquarters, so they have all closed.
I see. All right, well, Snake, thank you for the call and stay safe there.
Thank you.
All right, there is Snake from Moscow, and that will do it for today. We'll take a quick break. We will take calls again. Let's get into this week's email bag. You can email info@davidpakman.com if you have a question, comment, suggestion, correction, whatever, really. It's all welcome as long as it's respectful. Let's get right into the first one. Linda wrote in about something I said about the Noah's Ark story last week. Last week I said, you know, one of I struggle with some of these stories and fail to get answers when I say, well, if there were two of every animal, you had every kind of bird and every kind of insect. And, you know, we're talking about millions of species. How is that possible? Or what did the carnivorous animals eat or whatever, right? And Linda wrote in and said, actually, Linda and or John, it says both names, and they say, according to Genesis 1:29, mankind and animals were originally vegetarians. The food was put in the ark per 6:22, and in 9:1-5, after they landed, God instituted a new covenant and the eating of meat. This is the type of thing that I'm kind of talking about, because there's always some explanation, but it doesn't actually make any scientific sense. So, like, for example, in this case, it's, well, the animals were vegetarian at the time of Noah's Ark, and then the animals started to eat meat. Others will say, well, actually, really, God's will and direction really only applies to humans, not to animals. So now God is directing what animals eat. The other counterpoint would be, well, if this all happened in the last 5 or 6,000 years, there is, number one, no evidence that currently carnivorous animals were ever vegetarian. And if the idea is they evolved from being vegetarian to being carnivorous, 5,000 years is not nearly enough time for that to happen to all of those species. So that also doesn't make sense. But I get that they don't believe in the evolution piece anyway. So it all doesn't make sense. Another email said, well, on Noah's Ark, they were eating pickled and dried meats. The carnivorous animals ate pickled and dried meats, and that's why the issue of the animals that were alive being eaten isn't an issue. Well, but there's no evidence of that. Another one was they were all eating fish eggs. I've not seen any evidence of that. The other one I got was there, David, there were two of each main species. So like there were just two snakes. And then later those two snakes became all the subspecies. Maybe that would be plausible if we were talking about millions of years or longer. But if this all supposedly happened in 5 or 6,000 years, that doesn't make any sense. So the point here is they'll always come up with something, but there's no evidence for any of the stuff. And at a certain point, you have to say, well, what do I accept as evidence? And I've still not seen any convincing explanation of the Noah's Ark story. Okay, next is Michael. Michael wrote in about people who don't talk politics. Michael says, there's people on the right and left, but mainly the right, who simply don't talk politics. Is there a way to convince them why they need to get out and vote these radical conservatives out? I think many of them are Republicans because it's passed down. So yes, there's lots of people that are Republicans because they come from a Republican family. In my experience, the best way to get people who aren't into politics to follow politics is to say to them, okay, I get it. You don't care about politics. You don't care about news. It's boring. You're just not interested. I totally get that. That makes sense. There's so many things that what we can pay attention to. Tell me, what matters to you? And they go, well, I don't know. I like sports and car driving or whatever else. And go, no, I understand that. But you must think there's some problems in the world, either in your immediate community or with government or with, there must be some problem. And they go, well, yeah, I mean, I really hate it that, I don't know, whatever, right? Something related to climate or something related to a law or legislation, regulation of their business, whatever. You go, well, you might not care about politics, but other people then are deciding how your business is regulated. Other people are deciding how your immediate parks that are around you are being taken care of or not taken care of. So the point here is people who aren't into politics usually still have opinions about the world around them. And it's about just explaining to them that it's the political system that will impact what happens. And that will often work to get people to say, oh, I didn't realize that this thing I care about actually is politics and I should be paying attention and I should be involved. Give it a shot. Let me know how it works. Ozan wrote in saying about Clarence Thomas, David, sir, whatever happened to the Ginny Thomas story? The media seems to have lost interest in it. If this were a more liberal judge in a similar situation, it's easy for me to see the mainstream media and Fox mentioning the story constantly for days on end. I would love to hear your thoughts. On another note, I've been a member over a year now and love what you do. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. Thank you. So we have a situation where like every week there's a pretty major scandal. During the Trump presidency, it was basically every other day. But now every week or every couple of weeks, there's some big story. We find out something crazy that Mark Meadows did or Ginny Thomas did or whatever. Ginny Thomas was quite involved as a supporter of the January 6th festivities. And the story has basically gone away. And I think it's just an information overload type of thing. It's two things. Right-wing media won't even talk about it. And then in addition, even we on the left and independent media, we also have so many things to talk about that we can't keep every story in the forefront all the time. That's why it's good to have lots of independent media outlets, some that specialize on legal stories, some that specialize in whatever. But you're completely right. The story's kind of gone and it may be gone forever. Last week, I asked about who's more dangerous in a cult, and the cult is Trumpism. The true believers or the false believers who go, yeah, 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 the election was stolen, but they don't really believe it, but they say it to be part of the team. Silver wrote in and said, David, I believe the false believers are worse. It's similar to my understanding of the difference between a drug addict and a narcissist. In other words, the drug addict displays narcissistic behavior, but is either unaware or does so to get a fix. The narcissist likewise knows their manipulative behavior pattern, but they don't care. It is definitely a difficult question, but I believe of the two, that the one who knows their actions could possibly be the worst of the two is the worst one. So if I understand correctly, what Silver is saying is the false believers don't even believe this stuff, but still repeat it, knowing that its effect could be destructive and that thus they are worse. Whereas the true believer, in the case of the big lie, thinks, no, the election was really stolen, so that's something we have to fix, and therefore they are less pernicious. I could be convinced of that. There's definitely some logic to that. Yeah, no, that makes some sense. Canadian Paul wrote in about the Republican recently suggesting Fauci be killed by firing squad, writing in, stochastic Fauci firing squad. Sir, I would like to add another consideration to your coverage of the PUYASO. I don't know what that acronym is. John Bennett and his suggestion that Dr. Fauci should face a firing squad. I believe this to be the least common form of execution today, but it was used quite intentionally. Of the 74 million Republican Trump voters, how many have a gas chamber in their basement, an electric chair in their living room, or the chemistry background to administer a lethal injection? Now, how many have a gun? Keep up the great work. I think the point that Canadian Paul is talking about here is, if you want to get Fauci killed, and you go, Fauci should be sent to the electric chair. Most Trumpists don't have an electric chair in their basement. Maybe some do, but most don't. They don't have the means to do the thing that's being suggested. But many Trumpists have a gun. And that's why he said firing squad. That Canadian Paul may be onto something. It may not have been an accident that the term firing squad was used. Steve wrote in about the pandemic, and Steve says, do you really think states are honestly reporting COVID cases? I don't for one second think the reports are honest from all states, not even close. So the answer is no, but there's two parts to this. One, are there states that are deliberately hiding COVID cases at this point? Maybe. I mean, listen, probably. There's 50 states. You could probably find an example of some official somewhere who is limiting the higher numbers from being published. It's probably true. The bigger issue is now a lot of people who have symptoms don't even get tested. So they just don't show up in the numbers. And a lot of people who do a home test and test positive never report it. And so, of course, the numbers are lower. I'm still hearing some reports that say the real case numbers are 2 to 3 times higher than what is being reported. But it's not necessarily because the numbers are being lied about. It's people are testing at home or not testing, and none of that ever makes it into the case numbers. Next email is about Dan Bongino and my pronunciation. Dan Bongino, you disappointed me. Hi, David. I love your show. Keep up the great work. Started watching your show a few months ago because you're fair and you explain things with data. You disappointed me when you pronounced Dan Bongino's name incorrectly. The I is pronounced as a long E and not an I. Bongino. I only bring this up because you go on all the people that pronounced the new Supreme Court nominee's name incorrectly, which is great, and I agree with you 100%. To paraphrase you, you said something like, come on, guys, get the name right. You actually said maybe they're doing it on purpose, maybe they don't know how to pronounce it. You did the exact same thing with Dan Bongino. So, David, were you making fun of Dan's name, or did you really not know how to pronounce it? I'm sure a lot in the audience, as I do, await your answer. Keep up the great work. What do you guys think? Do you guys think I know it's not pronounced Bongino? Do you think I know it's not pronounced Tulsi Gabbard? You think I know it's not pronounced Jimmy Dore? Let me know. Let me know. I think the answer will become very evident. Philip wrote in a quick correction. And this, I love this. I love being corrected on this stuff. We talked about the betting odds for candidates. You can go on the website, predict it, and you can bet monies who will be the Republican nominee. You can bet on anything you want. And Philip wrote in and said, David, you described it as 70 cents of every dollar bet to describe the process of betting using the predicted prediction markets. In reality, the prices are the cost of a contract that settles at either a dollar or nothing, not the amount of every dollar bet on that market. It's the cost of a contract, not the volume. Might be pedantic, but I know David values accuracy. No, I appreciate that. When you go on to predict it, it'll say, for example, 70 cents next to Donald Trump. I wrongly said that means 70 cents 70% of the dollars bet are being bet on Trump being the nominee. That's wrong. But I think if I understand correctly, you have to bet 70 cents to end up making a dollar because it's relatively likely that it will be Trump. Whereas on a long shot candidate, you might only have to bet 5 cents to make a dollar if you're right. I think that that's the correct way. I'm not a big betting guy, but I appreciate the correction. Okay, lastly, and guys, this is just an instructive thing on things I can't do. Sunday night, Owen wrote to me and said, "Hey, David, I'm late on a part that's due for my paper. It's a persuasive essay. We could choose any topic. So I chose why corporate money should be taken out of politics. I need counter arguments to that point. I was wondering if you knew any to make it easier on me." Guys, I can't help you with your homework, okay? You would be surprised at how often I get stuff like this. You got to do your own work. I can't. Number one, this was due the next day. You know, even if you thought I could help you with your homework, if you email me Sunday night for Monday homework, I obviously can't help you. Number two, I don't have the ability or wherewithal and resources to respond to the emails that I get. And number three, do your own work, Owen, please. This is a very important life lesson. Do your own work. I'm begging you. All right. We have a great bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com. You'll get instant access. It'll be a beautiful thing. You can use the coupon code Obamna. Remember that Obamna?
Obamna.
Yeah. You can use that as a coupon code to get a discount when you sign up.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
RCT in sound from way out.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a once-over.
concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I have never seen such destruction. We have seen many wars in films, but have never seen such destruction in any war. It is a mockery.
While Russian forces intensify their attacks in Ukraine, Russian President Putin defends the invasion on this V-Day in Russia, the day in 1945 when Russia, the Soviet Union, defeated the Nazis. Some U.S. lawmakers are openly calling the fighting in Ukraine a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia. We'll speak with Anatol Levin, who says giving Ukraine intel on Russian generals is a risky gamble. He argues Ukraine is already winning. Victory can be achieved without risking nuclear war. Then, in a major development in the ongoing attack on the lives of transgender people in the United States, Alabama's become the first state to make it a felony to provide gender-affirming medical care to trans youth. LGBTQ plus rights advocates say the law could deeply harm the mental health of trans youth, as a major survey shows they already face a high risk of suicide and depression. Then, an historic election in Northern Ireland.
Today ushers in a new era, which I believe presents us all with an opportunity to reimagine relationships in this society on the basis of fairness, on the basis of equality, and on the basis of social justice.
On Friday, the nationalist Sinn Féin Party won the most seats in Northern Ireland's parliament for the first time ever. Backed Northern Ireland leaving the United Kingdom and reuniting with the Republic of Ireland. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a major speech in Moscow's Red Square, Russian President Vladimir Putin has defended his invasion of Ukraine, saying it was needed to preemptively rebuff NATO. But Putin did not declare a broader war in Ukraine, as many in the West had predicted. Putin spoke earlier today as part of a Victory Day celebration to mark the Soviet Union's defeat of Nazi Germany in 1945.
Preparations were openly underway for another punitive operation in Donbas and an invasion of our historic lands, including Crimea. Kiev has announced a possible acquisition of nuclear weapons. The NATO bloc began active military development of the territories adjacent to ours. This was an absolutely unacceptable threat, systematically created for us and right on our borders. Russia has preemptively rebuffed the aggression. It was forced, timely, and the only right decision. The decision of a sovereign, strong, independent country.
President Putin spoke as some U.S. lawmakers are openly describing the fighting in Ukraine as a proxy war between the United States and Russia. This is Democratic Congressmember Seth Moulton, who serves on the House Armed Forces Committee, speaking on Fox News.
We're not just at war to support the Ukrainians. We're fundamentally at war, although it's somewhat through a proxy, with Russia, and it's important that we win.
In recent days, U.S. officials have leaked information alleging U.S. intelligence was used by Ukraine to kill Russian generals and to sink Russia's Moskva warship. The Pentagon's publicly acknowledged providing Ukraine what it calls battlefield intelligence, but it denies providing, quote, specific targeting information. President Biden's reportedly criticized the leak, saying they've been counterproductive. In other developments, up to 60 people are feared to have died after Russia shelled a school in Ukraine's Luhansk region, where scores of people were seeking shelter. In this besieged city of Mariupol, all women,